Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott LaBarre, broadcasting from my home studio. Coming up later in the program, who is and who isn't wearing masks? But up front, the latest Franklin and Marshall College poll indicates Pennsylvanians are generally optimistic the state is headed in the right direction, even during the coronavirus pandemic, and that most Pennsylvanians think Governor Tom Wolf is doing a good job. Meanwhile, Democrat Joe Biden leads President Trump 3 months before the 2020 presidential election. To provide analysis of Pennsylvanians' opinions on several issues is Dr. G. Terry Madonna, political analyst and pollster at Franklin and Marshall College in Lancaster. Dr. Madonna, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me. I followed you a little bit on Facebook, and you were in some interesting places last week, weren't you?
I was. And
they were fabulous. They were fabulous, and you didn't have to worry about COVID-19 where you were.
Well, actually, yeah, we went to the Finger Lakes region and checked ahead of time to see what the COVID rates were. And, yeah, right. We were out in the country. But good to be back this morning, and I just want to let everyone know that if you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. All right, Terry, there is a lot of information, as usual, right, in the latest poll. This is your first one before the general election in 2020. So let's start with the election. And President Trump and Joe Biden, your poll shows that Pennsylvanians support Joe Biden. Now, these are registered voters, correct?
Yeah, we can go through, yes.
Okay.
Let's start with some basics. We, the Center for Opinion Research at Franklin and Marshall, did the poll on behalf of my center. The poll was conducted between July 20 and July 26. July 20 and 26. People could take the poll online. They could call an 800 number, and the interviewers working remotely, we're calling people as well. So we interviewed 600. They interviewed 667 registered voters in the state, and that produces a sample error of plus or minus 5.5. So overall, it was a fairly significant sample, and I think it's a really decent, admirable, if you will, representation of what the voters think. Now, again, as I like to point out, this is a snapshot in time. And since we were in the field, there have been, several changes that have taken place because polls only as good as at the time in which they're taken. Things can change. I can get into those a little bit later. But you're absolutely right. As you and I speak right now, 48% of Pennsylvania voters say the state is moving in the right direction, and Governor Wolf's job performance is 52% positive, and they're interrelated. As you know, the COVID outbreak has not been as severe in Pennsylvania as it has been in many other states, particularly in the South and in the West. That's point number one. Point number two, yes, it's certainly true that about half of the state's voters think the state is moving in the right direction. And I think to some extent that has a lot to do with people's finances. It's true only 20% of people say they're better off today than they were in the past year. But overall, a good many people say that, about 60% saying they expect to say the same in the future. So there's not a lot of overwhelming pessimism, if you will, about people's personal finances. And I think that's pretty important. And that's probably a major factor in why state moving in the right direction. There have been no taxes imposed upon the voters. we could go on that, but overall, it's been pretty positive.
You know, that's a bit of a surprise, I think, Terry. In fact, I always ask you when the poll comes out and you provide some analysis of the poll results, the biggest surprise. Are you surprised at all by that? And what is the biggest surprise in the poll that was just released?
Yeah, that's a great question. I was surprised, but here's what's fascinating. If you look at other Pennsylvania polls, Governor Wolf's job performance has been very strong, and so has the state moving in the right direction. So it's not like somehow, some way, that was totally
new. Yeah. The finances is what I was referring to, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think overall that's pretty consistent, although you do have to wonder, given COVID-19, given the number of restaurants and bars and salons that every day we read about, oh, they're not going to open, or this company or that company files for bankruptcy, right? And you would think that it would be much worse, because if you look at the federal numbers when it comes to these things, they're substantially lower. Make no mistake about it.
Yeah, that's what I was referring to as being a bit of a surprise, in that there are so many people who have lost their jobs. I mean, high unemployment rates nationally, a record loss in a quarterly loss in the gross domestic product. So the news economically across the country and here in Pennsylvania has not been that great. So those results kind of surprised me, because there are so many small businesses that are hurting and so many people who are out of work. And, you know, the Congress right now is debating what to do about the expired unemployment benefits. So it just hasn't been that good of news, except for your poll results.
Yeah, well, here's what's sort of fascinating about it also. When folks are asked about the President Trump's job approval on the handling of the economy, the president is still, the Real Clear Politics average when I looked yesterday was 48.6% on handling the economy. That's nationally. Now, just think about what you just said. And then when we come to Pennsylvania on Trump's job performance, which is much lower in general when it's just his approval, but when we ask about the economy, it's 45% positive. So nationally, it's 48.6. In Pennsylvania, it's 45% on Trump's handling the economy, despite, as you accurately point out, the difficulty that many businesses, restaurants, we could go through the list of them, and that still surprises me. Now, back in April, in May, and even in early June, President Trump's job performance on handling the economy was above 50%. Now I'm talking about nationally. So that's quite remarkable. And we know that the economy is throughout American history, the most significant element in whether a president gets reelected or not. Look at Jimmy Carter. He lost to Ronald Reagan. Carter was seeking his second term. He had a problems in the Middle East, but we also had stagflation, double-digit unemployment and double-digit inflation. Then let's go to George Herbert Walker Bush, seeking a second term, lost to Bill Clinton in 1992 because of a recession. And one of Bill Clinton's campaign managers, James Carville, who spent a lot of time in Pennsylvania, quoted after the election, "It's the economy, stupid." Remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
And then President Obama, then candidate Obama, wins the presidency in 2008 because of the Great Recession. So there isn't any doubt that Donald Trump's election hinges at the moment on two things: how he's handling coronavirus on election day, and, you know, do we still have it spiking? Is it still high, or does it drop down? What about the economy? Do the voters think it's recovering sufficiently? As you and I speak right now, they're probably the two most important things in whether President Trump wins re-election or not. And who knows what can happen between now and November 3 that might shake up the race. You know, totally unpredictable at this point.
Well, and you said that you pointed out that a lot has happened since the poll was taken in late July. And let's face it, in this news cycle, and that's how a lot of times I refer to it, every day there's, or every other day at least, there's some kind of bombshell that can right. have an influence on voters, people who are responding to polls. So let's break this down a little bit more. I want to go back to the where Biden and Trump are right now in Pennsylvania. You have, or say you, the F&M poll has Biden leading the president by 50 to 41%. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, that's a nine point lead, which again was not inconsistent with what we have seen, you know, what we have seen with other polls, in the sense that the real clear point average when we were in the field was something like 8.3 or 4. Now it's lower, as I point out. And the real clear politics average right now, it's nationally, it's 7.4. And in Pennsylvania at the time, it was in the low seven. So when you get the 9 points, it's no big deal. But here's the point. Trump has overwhelming support among conservative voters. Biden has overwhelming support among liberal voters. I'm trying not to drown everybody in numbers, including me. And here's what's really important. When you take a look at voters with no college degrees, white voters, Trump wins that group handily. When you take a look at white voters with college degrees, Biden wins that group handily. So you begin to see exactly what we talked about during the presidential election in 2016, and that's Donald J. Trump's working class electorate, his working class electorate. And so he wins those parts of the state, like out in the Southwest, where he's defeating Joe Biden, up in the Northwest, if you will, and in central PA. What's the point I'm trying to make? Rural and small towns with a lot of working class voters are in Trump's camp. The cities and the suburbs are in Joe Biden's hands, meaning, and he's winning pretty handily. If you take Philadelphia and the Southeast, talking about Bucks, Chester, Montgomery, and Delaware counties, Biden is at 71%, 71%, which shows you how Pennsylvania has become divided over the last decade or so.
Couple points there. You're right. You know, we've discussed this several times, how the suburbs of Philadelphia, Bucks, Montgomery, but Bucks, Chester County in particular, were traditionally Republican voters, moderate Republican right. voters for the most part, but now have turned into Biden supporters. That's one thing. Another question, though, and this is mostly national, I'm wondering if you've seen this here in Pennsylvania, is that even though President Trump won those high school graduates, white high school graduates who didn't go to college, very, very handily in 2016, that the support in that group has gone down somewhat, even though he still leads.
Correct.
Have you found that?
Yes, I think you're correct about that. It's not as widespread as it was. I think you're exactly right. But you also hit on another fundamental problem that the Republicans have. As you pointed out, a decade or so ago, the suburbs were Republican. And in the last decade, they've begun to switch. Look what happened. Look what happened in Pennsylvania, in the Philadelphia suburbs in 2018, in the midterm election. The Democrats won the 4th, the 5th, and the 6th congressional districts. In other words, in Montgomery, Delaware, and Chester counties. The Republicans, with Brian Fitzpatrick, held on to the 1st district. That's basically a Bucks County district. And they won, the Democrats won the 7th district, Susan Wild, up in the Lehigh Valley. And The Democrats won 41 seats in the House of Representatives in Washington, the federal house, largely because of the dramatic suburban shift, particularly among college-educated women and millennials, that, you know, decisively went for the Democrats. And you can't understate that. You can't, or I should say, overstate that because of its significance. In Pennsylvania, the Democrats picked up 11 seats in the state house, 5 seats in the state senate, many of them, again, suburban-based. So when you take Philly and the southeast, we're talking about a huge percentage of Pennsylvania's population. And one of the reasons that Trump won the state by 44,000 votes was what he was able to do, as we pointed out, with white working-class voters out in the southwestern part of our state, in places like Washington, Westmoreland, Greene, Fayette, Cambria, Beaver. At the time, every one of those counties had a Democratic voter registration edge over the Republicans, and Trump won them, not by 5 points, not by 10 points, by 20, 25, and higher. And that's what gave him Pennsylvania. The turnout was up, and he won those regions with a significant percentage.
We'll talk more about the presidential race in just a moment and some other issues in the F&M poll in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Coming up on tomorrow's program, Federal Judge John Jones will be our guest. We'll talk about federal justice during the pandemic. Also, security for judges. There was that highly publicized case just a few weeks ago where the son of a federal judge was killed and her husband wounded. We'll be talking with Judge Jones about that as well. That's coming up on tomorrow's Smart Talk. Our guest today is Dr. G. Terry Madonna, political analyst and pollster at Franklin and Marshall College. The latest F&M poll was released late last week. It finds that Joe Biden leads President Trump 50 to 41% amongst registered voters. A lot of other results as well that we'll discuss. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Terry, and I don't know how. Go ahead.
Before we go on, I want to make a couple of quick points relative to what we were talking about.
Okay.
When we talked about the state's job performance, it's state heading in the right direction, 48%. But I want to point out, back in October of 2019, when in a poll that we did, imagine this, 57% say the state was heading in the right direction. Remember that when the economy was buzzing along, and that's pretty significant. So there was a huge drop, and make no mistake about it. And I think that largely has a result with COVID-19. Registered voters, 32% of registered voters said COVID-19 was the most important problem facing the state. And that's, if you go back in recent history in our poll, no other subject, no other issue reached anywhere near 32% positive. That's how dominant that particular issue has become and remains critical, as I said, relative to people's concerns, and also relative to whether President Trump can win re-election. The other point that I wanted to make was we asked voters when about their decision to vote for Donald Trump. Is it a vote for Trump or a vote against Biden? I hope you're seated for this one. 78% of the people who were voting for Trump said they were voting for Trump, not against Biden. In other words, it was a positive vote for Trump, 78%. 22% said they were voting against Biden. Now imagine this. When we asked people's decision who were going to vote for Joe Biden, was it more a vote for Biden or against Trump? 55% of the voters said it was a vote against Trump, 43% a vote for Biden. And by the way, that's consistent with some national polls that I've seen. So the hostility that Democratic voters have against President Trump outweighs their positive support for Joe Biden. Now, they're going to vote for Biden, but for different reasons.
Yeah. I mean, those numbers don't surprise me. I mean, I think that we all have seen that those who support the president are very passionate about their support for the president. And, right. And in fact, and you can talk more about this, that, you know, many, one of the things that Democrats are fearful of is that, well, and I think even the Trump campaign has pointed this out, is that those Trump supporters are more passionate about their candidate, as your poll shows, and are more likely to vote than those who are Biden supporters and just want to vote against Trump and may not show up at the polls in numbers that the Trump supporters would.
Right. Yeah, there's more enthusiasm, you're exactly right, among Trump voters than among Democratic voters. And by the way, in our state, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the Republicans have picked up vote. In terms of voter registration, the Republicans have picked up more in the state than Democrats. So I think that's another reinforcing view to the comments that you just made. Remember, the Democrats, the Biden, there's still concern among the progressive element of the Democratic Party. Now, believe me, they're strongly against Trump. Moderate Democrats concerned that Biden is moving too far to the left. And, you know, there's that division that still exists. And then conversely, you have the progressive voters who want to push Biden further to the left. And I think that will be evident in his vice presidential selection, which he's probably going to make this week, whether we get to know it or not until next week remains to be seen. But he's obviously has to pick a progressive. He said it'll be a woman. It's likely to be an African-American woman, and it has to be a progressive. If he doesn't pick a progressive, then I think that will even make the enthusiasm to vote for him raise even more.
You know, when we talk about that enthusiasm, as you mentioned, when we spoke earlier in the program about me traveling last week, driving through central Pennsylvania and northern Pennsylvania, I have to say that, if I had to guess, I would say the Trump signs compared to the Biden signs were at least... at least 40-1. I mean, flags, Trump flags all over the place. People with the Trump, you know, Trump for president, make America great again, keep America great, painted on the sides of their barns. I mean, there's one business in Perry County along Route 1115 that says Trump painted on the side of a business. I'll bet that it's 50 feet long. And, you know, yeah, it's at least 40-1, probably even higher than that. Now, that's going from central Pennsylvania to the north central part of the state.
Well, that's his big area of strength. And one of the questions we get was, would voters who were Trump supporters not tell pollsters they were going to vote for Trump? We heard that back in 2016, and I've not seen any studies that said that was the case. But anecdotally, like you did last week in 2016, I was traveling all over the state. And when I would do speeches and interact with people, a lot of voters, again, it's not scientific, would tell me they were voting for Trump, but they didn't want to talk about it.
Yeah. There's been some talk about that. Is it hard to tell whether people are telling the truth to the pollsters?
Yeah. Oh, I think they're telling the truth. I think they would say they're not going to answer the question. You know what I mean? That they wouldn't give you an answer. That's mostly how that would occur. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I just don't think that's, given what we've now seen with this enthusiasm I don't think there's going to be a big reluctance, as we may have seen in 2016, for Trump supporters to talk to interviewers, you know what I mean, to say they're willing to vote for Trump. You're exactly right. I think there's much more evidence that the Trump voters are more outspoken, more visible than they were. And they were fairly visible and outspoken in the main, but there were, as I indicated, some who wouldn't talk. I don't think that's the case as we move forward.
What about independents? Where do independents come down between the president and Joe Biden?
Yeah, well, there's no doubt where independents are. Independents are basically supporting Joe Biden at this point, and I think that's likely to stay the same. I don't see much in the way of a big change likely coming up in that regard.
We have a listener of Virginia who asked a question. It says, in talking to people, watching and listening to media, it appears that there are people who voted for Trump in 2016 who are no longer supporting him. However, I have never seen anything that shows that people who voted for Clinton in 2016 are now supporting Trump. Is this the case at all?
That's a good question. I think that the Clinton supporters are largely end up supporting Joe Biden. I don't see much in the way. I have not read anything about much in the way of a big defection there. I don't know why they would defect. I think we're primarily talking more about moderate voters. One of the things that Biden has done is, you talked about his inroads. He's also made inroads among older voters, which Trump won, older voters. So I think that's another concern that the Trump campaign has to have. And we'll see how that all plays out. But I think that the majority of the Clinton voters, a big majority, are hanging in with Biden. I don't see much in the way of difference there.
Terry, this has nothing to do with the poll, but last week on Thursday, President Trump suggested postponing the election or delaying the election. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, let's start with the fact that the President of the United States, under the Constitution, has to take office on January 20. Imagine this. If somehow, some way, we didn't have the election decided, no electoral majority or no whatever by January 20, you know who would become president?
Oh, I do.
Nancy Pelosi.
That's right, yeah.
It's providing, the Democrats remain in control of the House.
Right, right. Speaker of the House.
The second thing is that we had 1.8 million people apply for mail-in ballots in the state of Pennsylvania. That was about half of the total vote back on June 2nd in the primary. About 1.5 million people actually cast ballots. They actually turned them in. About 300,000 did not. So what do we know? It took two weeks to get the final results in on the elections that took place, the primary elections that took place in many counties. So think about this. We will more than double the number of mail-in ballots, and I'll include absentees where you need a specific reason under Pennsylvania election law to use them, but the mail-in ballot, that's point number one. Point number two is that there's a debate about, President Trump thinks we shouldn't have them at all, and some think we should have them, but we have to have significant reforms in terms of how you get two envelopes, you stick your ballot in one envelope, and that's confidential, and then you have an outer ballot that gets it to the county election officials. You following that?
Yeah.
Two ballots.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you open up? You open up the outer ballot, you open up the outer envelope, and then you have the actual ballot in the inner ballot, if I'm making any sense. So how quickly should these be opened, the envelope with the ballot, and the counting begun? And then how long after the postmark on election day is the ballot received is the ballot mailed but not received into the county offices because of what happens with the Postal Service. You're beginning to get the problem. And what are the counties going to do, the election officials in counties, about handling this flood of paper? And so there's a number of significant problems, and there's a lawsuit by the Trump administration on the so-called drop boxes. These are not in the county election offices where the ballots are mailed, but these are drop boxes in various places where you could put your ballot in, which the Trump people and some Republicans believe is illegal. So the Wolf administration made an announcement, I guess Buchvar did, the Secretary of the Commonwealth, that they will have stamps on the envelopes. The state will pay for the stamps on the envelopes. So in theory, that takes care of the cost of mailing, not in theory, if they get it in fact, of mailing in the ballots. This is very complicated, very, very complicated. The final point is there's not a lot of evidence that there's wholesale fraud.
No.
You know what I mean? That the president, am I going to say that there wasn't any? No. But it wasn't significant. And you know, there are ways that county officials can take to even protect it more. And there were mistakes and errors made by county election officials, make no mistake about it, but it wasn't fraudulent.
Well, that's just it. I mean, just read a column yesterday where it is more likely for election fraud to occur rather than voter fraud, or whether you want to call it fraud or mistakes being made on the other end.
Right.
You know, a few things there is that, you know, you and I usually have a discussion the day after the election. And remember, at the primary, we didn't have a whole lot of results. Election night is going to be
exactly.
much, much different this year in 2020. It may be a week.
Yeah.
It may be weeks before we know who won,
yeah.
whether it's presidential, whether it's you know, state house, senate, whether it's you know, something on the congressional level. So things are going to be a lot bit different. Terry, we only have a few minutes left, and I want to touch on a couple other issues. I'm going to be talking with a Susquehanna University professor here in a few minutes, some research into mask wearing. You asked that question in the poll about mask wearing. What did you find?
Well, overall, voters in Pennsylvania, you know, support the wearing a mask. That's not an issue. I think they're very reasonable in terms of what they said, and I don't think that's likely to change. That's not likely to change very much. The same is true when we ask people if they were staying at home. 30-some percent of the people said that they were, 34% said they were staying 7 days. Sorry, that's my home phone. Sorry.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, so, you know, one thing I'll say about it is that, you know, there were, you know, a number of people who were talking about, I wanted to ask about the breakdown when you're talking about mask wearing. You did find a difference, though, in party affiliation with support for mask wearing, correct?
Yes. Democrats far more likely to say yes than Republicans. And in some respects, that doesn't strike me as totally off the mark. Republicans, here's the other thing. Again, I'm trying not to overwhelm everybody with numbers. Overall, when it comes to more quickly opening up the economy, Republicans and the business community have been more in favor. I'm not saying they're irresponsible about it. I'm merely saying they pushed to open up the economy faster than Democrats had. And there was considerable criticism levied at Governor Wolf, who was, you know, not opening up the economy as quickly as some would have liked. Again, I'm not making a suggestion that there's right or wrong here. I'm making the suggestion that there are just these big differences that exist by party, and that's not likely to change very much. I think the more we get into that, the more we find that those numbers are very, very consistent. But Pennsylvanians overall do support wearing masks. they were in favor of it, and I think that's important. By the way, the other issue is some people are raising the issue that it's that the state and the federal government doesn't constitutionally have the right to impose these mask wearing regulations with penalties if you don't follow suit. My opinion, for what it's worth, is we're talking about life or death. Life or death here. And I think the state and the federal government certainly can do, you know, has the legal authority to do that.
So, Terry, how many more polls before Election Day?
Well, we're at least going to do one in September and October. As we always do, we're in a discussion about whether we want to do one in August as well. Typically, we would do July, August, September, and October. We're at least going to do two more. We might do three.
Dr. G. Terry Madonis, political analyst and pollster at Franklin and Marshall College. Dr. Madonna, thank you, as always, for being on the program today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Coming up later this week on Smart Talk, Wednesday in particular, Pennsylvania's Republican U.S. Senator Pat Toomey will be our guest during one segment of the program. That's coming up on Wednesday this week. Since the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic, social distancing and mask wearing have been important tools in the plan to slow the spread of the virus. Different countries and even some communities have been slower to advocate for and require masks in public places. Many public health officials believe this is one of the reasons the U.S. is experiencing a COVID-19 surge in different parts of the country. A recent study on mask wearers found a gender divide in mask wearing, with men more likely to resist wearing masks. Joining us on Smart Talk today to explore the attitudes toward mask wearing is Dr. Rolf Peterson, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Susquehanna University. Dr. Peterson, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
If you have a question or a comment about mask wearing, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. All right, Dr. Peterson, so break it down for us. What did you find as far as a gender divide in mask wearing?
Sure. Well, I think you have, you have a number of issues, but essentially there is resistance depending on gender. There are some studies that are looking at this. My study with my co-author Carl Palmer from Illinois State was just one sort of cut at this, looking at masculinity in particular. But you have a series of evidence and arguments that are building about gender and particularly men resisting masks.
So why? Why are men more likely to avoid a mask?
Well, when we were first designing our study, we were looking in, and this was in early April, and it became clear that mask wearing was going to be essential, even though maybe it wasn't earlier. And we were looking at a lot of columns and a lot of arguments, and people were talking about whether or not masculinity was at fault or this, and tracing it to the highest levels of government. And what we wanted to do was see if we could test it. Because one of the interesting things about and cool things about social science research is you can actually test these arguments. And one of the main ones that people were hitting on was this idea of toughness or masculinity, of men feeling negative attitudes about their own masculinity when they're wearing a mask. And so that's what we tried to explore.
Now, you've done a lot of research that have a relationship between psychology and
yes.
and politics. So, okay, how do you measure someone who says that I feel weaker or less
sure.
masculine if I'm wearing a mask?
Sure. Well, usually when we're engaging in research that uses psychology, we're using set batteries and questions that are designed to measure the level of sort of belief in masculine toughness or measure psychological traits or personality traits. So some of the research I've done has looked at the way personality traits affect political ambition and a person's desire to run for political office. And in this case, what that meant is that we had to find a battery that looked at a measurement of your belief in masculine toughness and how that affected what we were particularly interested in was emotional responses to it. We were interested in trying to see sort of how it affects how we feel, because it becomes extremely important in how we think and our behaviors, our initial feelings about something. And so for us, we found we used the Masculine Norms Index, which is a series of questions that measures sort of your belief in masculine norms of toughness.
And it wasn't just the word weak that came out of this. I mean, there were some other descriptions that those who didn't want to wear a mask provided.
Yeah.
What were some of those things
exactly
that they described? What were some of those things?
Yeah, well, we had both positive and negative terms. So we had terms like, I feel controlled, I feel weak, I feel scared, or even silly, which I think is an interesting one, but something that is a very human thing to feel. And then we also had positive words like brave, caring, strong, and protected. And so we were able to look at both negative feelings and emotions and positive ones. And what we found in our study was that if you held these sort of views of masculine toughness, that men should be tough, and this was actually for men and women who took the survey, they had it correlated with higher negative emotional ratings. So they were more likely to say that they felt controlled or scared or silly. And when you looked at the positive ones, it was less powerful in terms of a relationship. And so for men, though, masculine toughness still had an effect of them feeling less positive towards wearing masks.
You know, one of the things I have to say that is really, truly shocking in all this is how extreme some of this has gotten. And just, I mean, it seems like every other day there's an example. Adam Zborowski on Friday was told by a cigar shop clerk, this is in Lehigh County, that he had to wear a mask in the shop. And the 35-year-old, he angrily refused. Instead, he grabbed two cigars, stormed outside, and then pulled a handgun and shot at the clerk in Bethlehem Township, Pennsylvania.
Oh, my. Wow.
The next day, cornered near his home, Zborowski allegedly fired at police with an AK-47, sparking a wild shootout that at least seven officers ended with Zborowski shot several times and under arrest. Now, this is just one example. There have been arguments over masks that led to a beating of a Trader Joe's employee in New York, fatal shooting of a Family Dollar store security guard in Michigan, and the shooting of a McDonald's worker in Oklahoma. I mean, how can I think a lot of us have a hard time understanding that someone would get that angry to attempt to kill someone over being told to wear a mask.
Yeah, I think your response is exactly correct. I don't know if any of the studies that I have seen can actually account for that extremity of behavior, because it is so extreme, and the stories do seem to come up and pop up on social media. But those really extreme behaviors, I'm not even sure how a study like mine can speak to them, because it's one thing to just feel discomfort and to not want to wear a mask or to have problems communicating because you're wearing a mask, making things social interactions harder, and it's a completely another thing to have violent reactions, which I don't even know how to explain those.
You know, one thing that I have to say also in talking to people who generally are against wearing masks is that, and maybe there are even some that are wearing masks, is that they don't generally understand what the mask is for.
Right.
There are many, many people out there who believe that wearing a mask will keep you from getting the virus. And really, it's the other way around, that keep
it's
you
protection
from
of others.
Right. Protection from others
and community.
And, you know, so some people look at that and say, well, you're being selfish if you refuse to wear a mask. But this confusion issue, I think is a big one. And yes, it doesn't help that very early on in the pandemic that the federal government said that, mm-hmm, you know, we don't know whether the, you know, the mask would do you any good or not. So yes, a lot of people have grasped, have jumped onto those two things and said, see, I don't have to wear a mask. Did you, I don't, mm-hmm, know whether your research covered this or not, but would you agree that that confusion has added to this?
Yeah, and I think that's exactly right. I think one of the things to always think about this type of phenomenon is that there's a lot of contributing factors, and we're just looking at one cut of it and looking at this sort of how masculinity affects it. But there are just a number of things going on. I think you're exactly right to look at the information system that people were getting, because early on there was that message from government authority figures that essentially said, well, masks aren't necessary, just wash your hands, don't touch your face. That changed and has now changed, and the CDC has changed those recommendations. But you're right, that anchor point for information has given people more reason to resist it. And if you feel discomfort, and if you don't, one of the things we know about people, if you don't want to engage in behaviors, you will find information that supports that. And so you're right, that first information point is really important. And so is the broader information environment. I mean, we were shaking our heads and wringing our hands about fake news in the 2016 election. Well, now look at fake news in the middle of a pandemic and information sources. So it becomes very difficult, because we know that when people get anxiety, in political science, anxiety isn't necessarily a bad thing, because what happens with anxiety is it usually motivates people to learn. It motivates them to do information seeking. And usually, in most studies that have come before this, using examples of things like swine flu, and there's, you know, when you sort of give people these anxiety causing things, trust in government goes up and they seek out information. But the caveat to that is they need good information. And there's a question both in the early communication and in the current media framework whether people are getting accurate information.
Good grief. This is from a listener, Dr. Peterson. This listener, yeah, says, good grief. It's no more complicated than when a man refuses to ask for directions when lost. Same thing, male stubbornness. Now, I'm not on board with man bashing, but at the same time, would you agree with that? This is the same thing?
Well, I think there is a kernel there there is something that rings true there. But remember, there's also a lot of public health studies that show that men will engage in more risky behaviors, that they will maybe not seek mental health counseling because of fears of masculinity and issues, that they will not wear helmets and things of that nature. And so maybe there is a root there in that base example, but there's also a lot of other studies that look at how gender affects men and public health.
Well, yeah, there are some psychological reasons for a lot of this, but is there any reason to be optimistic with what you found? I mean, or did you see any kind of trends as far as more people wanting to wear a mask, or maybe reluctantly saying, okay, I'll wear the mask?
Yeah, when we asked questions about actual behaviors, which are difficult to quite to capture because people live in such diverse settings, they have different jobs, they have different environments. I live in a fairly rural town in a neighborhood that I don't come within 6 feet of people very often. But when we asked people, are you wearing masks, overwhelmingly they said they were wearing masks, even the people who were having sort of negative emotional reactions. And when Pew looked at it just a month ago on June 4th, on a study that went from June 4th to June 10th, they had it with 65% of people in the U.S. saying they wore masks all of the time when they enter a store, or most of the time, 15 saying some of the time, which means about 80%, but they still had 9% say hardly ever and 7% say never. So you still have over 15% that are just not, even when entering a business, don't wear masks.
Dr. Rolf Peterson, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Susquehanna University. Dr. Peterson, thank you very much for being on the program today.
Thank you so much. And a very interesting conversation with Professor Madonna as well.
Oh, yeah, always is. Thank you very much.
All right. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning.